Hey, this is Matt Cain with the San Francisco Giants, and you guys are listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants. This is Torture Cast.
Welcome to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the 2010, 2012, and now 2014 World Series champion San Francisco Giants. I'm Chad King, and who else is desperate enough to talk baseball in this drought of actual gameplay?
Ooh, me.
I found two of them. That anxious voice you hear there in the crowd is Ben. Ben, welcome back. How you doing tonight?
Hey, I missed out on getting to crow about the World Series, but
yeah,
the moment has passed.
You got some catching up to do, man. I know. The moment has passed. It's been 5-6 weeks?
Well, actually, that's not true. Yeah. The moment hasn't passed if you're in Kansas City, because apparently we've completely reopened an old wound, but we'll talk about that later.
Rip that scab right off. And the other voice you heard there is a one Eric P. Danielson Nathanson. I just threw in those two middle names just for fun. How you doing, Eric?
Well, I'm doing well, gentlemen. How you guys doing tonight?
If we're going to keep giving Jennifer all kinds of middle names, we have to give her TFF all kinds of middle names. So
there you go. Yeah.
Ah, fair enough.
Yeah, you guys are related that way.
So Eric Albus Dumbledore Nathanson it is.
Oh.
That's perfect.
I look forward to the ever-shifting names.
No. All right. No, you don't.
So this is our first hot stove podcast of the offseason, and obviously the first time we've recorded in about 4 weeks or so. The last time we were reveling in the tears of our champagne dribbling down our faces, because it was awesome.
We weren't sure if it was tears or champagne, and no one cared.
It's all the same. Yeah, we went... Gotta look back at that. We went 2 hours and 40 minutes, Eric. Do you know that?
No, you know, I saw it the next day and I was just kind of stunned.
I went to go edit that night, I was trimming it all down. I was like, there's some dead air in the middle, right? Did I do something here? But no, we went that long. But I mean, that's the thing. It was so cool to talk about it. We've only been able to do it one other time in 2012 because this podcast wasn't around after the one in 2010.
Right.
So it was my second time doing that. And this is part of the reason we do this podcast. You know, I mean, it's not only talking about the Giants and breaking it down and now having access to the team and really just exploring kind of an alternate view from the fan side, because we're able to share that, you know, with the local Giants community. But man, that is fun recording that. You can only do that once every so often, and I've done it twice now. So
I was going to say we've got to do it more than most podcasts have any right to in the span of 4 years. So
yeah, any Kansas City Royal podcast. I'm sorry, about that.
our hearts go out to you, and also magazine covers.
So
hey, any St. Louis Cardinals podcast? They've never gotten to do it either.
They did in 2011.
Well, no, 2011
started when we did.
Yeah, but not 2 and 3 years.
I see what you're saying.
Like,
you're right about that, sir.
I'm just saying.
No one has done that 2 and 3 years.
Yeah.
Well, and when you think about it, the only other significant Giants podcast that has ever been out there with any duration is Giants Pod, and we love those guys over there, Thomas and Danny. But they've been kind of hit or miss lately. So
there's a couple of things that have sort of begun to surface, but I don't know how consistent they've become.
Yeah. And my point was that
literally because
nothing has been around since 2010.
Say that.
Yeah. Nothing has been around since 2010. So I think we can say we're the only podcast that actually has recorded 2 World Series podcasts. So we should be the SI Sportsman of the Year. Just saying.
Clearly.
All right. Well, speaking of Royal Blue Tears, we had. We shed a few tears of our own. At least some of us, I think, did. A lot of Giants fans did. The first topic I wanted to talk about tonight was Pablo Sandoval. We have lost our panda. He decided to go ahead and sign with the Boston Red Sox. 5 years, $95 million is the purported contract amount, I think, with a six-year option. Aside from the tax savings, you know, he's going to get like an extra $7 million over the 5 years or something like that because of Massachusetts taxes.
Right.
I want to kind of get Ben, your point of view on why he may have chosen to sign with Boston instead of stick with a place that he's revered, reveled. He can go 0-10. People still cheer for him. He's got his panda hats. He's got his crowd, his whole marketing machine.
Well,
obviously, it's not just that. But why do you think he left, given that the contracts were the same?
So I have to point this out, though. I mean, if you listen to all the things that you just said, you know, that people pretty much will cheer him already. He's essentially a built-in hero. He's, you know, pushing the limits of being able to do no wrong with his postseason performance and everything else. Well, that sounds suspiciously like stopping. And I think that one of the points that Grant in McCovey Chronicles made that was really good was, you know, you only get so many years to baseball. I mean, if you're going to become a manager, if you're going to become a coach of some kind, yeah, there's a lot more years you're going to get a different kind of challenge, but you only get to do this, to be this person for so long. And for Panda, we really don't know how long that's going to be. I mean, is it going to be a case where it turns out he's got, you know, freak physical makeup and just sort of stays the way he is for a long period of time? Or is he going to start, you know, deteriorating rapidly? Or is he going to just kind of follow a general, like, Big Poppy trend? Don't know. And neither does he. So it was sort of that sense of, I think, I need to do something different. I have to, you know, have a bit of a challenge and be, you know, start in a new situation and try to see if I can do something else. Because staying in San Francisco, it's not that it would have been the same. I mean, nothing ever is the same around here, but it almost, the challenge would have been different, you know, sort of saying, okay, well, I've done this, not necessarily like I can't do it again. I don't even think that it's anything like I'm, you know, over or sick of anything. It was just, I need to do something new. And you only get so many chances to see what else is out there. And if you stay with one fan base the entire time, you know, we always want to think that there's a sense of loyalty about these things and that there's a sense of like, well, we're the ones that made you, so, you know, we're the ones that you should love the most. And it's like, well, you know, maybe he will. Maybe he'll sign a, you know, 2-day contract and retire, 1-day contract, retire as a Giant, you know, 5-hour, I don't know, the one out, like the pregame JT Snow substitution, I don't know. But, you know, maybe he won't. Maybe he'll end up winning 5 World Series with Boston and he'll end up retiring, you know, Red Sox in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, in his press conference, they asked him that directly. In fact, it was a Comcast Sports New England reporter that asked him that very question, said, man, you basically got it made. You got 3 rings in 5 years. You got a fan base that loves you. The contract offers are the same. You play in a wonderful city, great weather, all that stuff. Why choose Boston? And it was more of a rhetorical question. I'm sure he's excited as a reporter to cover an interesting personality.
Sure, but, you know,
and he did come out and he said, you know, hey, I'm looking for a new challenge. And that relates to what you just said right there. And I do think that is a huge part of the equation. Because
I think so. And I mean, I'm sure that Big Poppy, you know, stumped for it and everything else. But the fact remains, you just like, and Poppy knows it. I mean, he's squeezed more years out of baseball than almost anybody has any right to, frankly. Yeah, right. And you know, you only get so much time. You got to decide how you're going to use it. Yeah. And some people, you know, there's very few out there who are going to stick with one team their entire career, especially nowadays. But there are others who are sort of don't have a choice. And Pablo is one of the few that really does.
No, he really does.
So he took advantage.
No, and Eric, what do you think about these? If there's anything else to it than just the new challenge.
It depends on what you as a player want to play for, what you consider the challenges. Like, some players are totally satisfied. Madison Bumgarner, as an example, will never sit there and say, I want to find a new challenge like that. He will never say that. He is the same guy that will be there his entire career if the Giants will have him. And I think Buster Posey's cut from that same cloth.
It shows through in that Southern personality, yeah.
Right. And I think Pablo, though, his reasons for playing might be different. He might be thinking more in the Hall of Fame and you know, that
adventure.
Kind of a thing. Right. And so the DH might come about at some point, and I think it's got to play in the back of his mind that he could take over as the DH when Poppy finally retires, you know, that the team could – like basically be publicly passed from one guy to another. He knew that the Giants would never be his team. He would never be the guy. But in Boston, after Big Poppy retires and basically hands it off to him and says, you can now be the guy. I think that is part of what the motivation's got to be there.
Yeah, I do think that exploring a new challenge is a huge part of it. I know that all of us in our careers, you know, whenever you're in a job, it could be a good job and decently well paid, but
If there's a new, rut, you get into it sometimes.
Yeah, there can be a rut, and if a new opportunity presents itself, and sometimes change is good, even if where you are is still good, sometimes change is good for the psyche, just, you know, what you kind of wish for in life, strive for in life. Sometimes change just is the spice of life, and it could be all of those things. I do kind of want to explore some of the more subversive topics, I guess, if you will, with you two guys, and that is all of the... We won't get too swanky here, but all of the kind of the whispered rumors and you know, people have definitely talked and written
you
about
mean
it.
Like we spurned his contract, therefore he left us.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, just because when you do stack up all of the players, like you just said, Eric, he'll never be the man in San Francisco, but he has a chance at being the man in Boston once Big Papi leaves, because here is going to be, you know, Mad Bum and Posey and these guys through like 2019 and 2020, which and would even Boston, be longer than his contract if he signed with the Giants.
Even Pedroia hasn't quite seized that in Boston. He certainly tried his hardest, but nobody can do what Big Papi does out there from a, you know, does this team love you standpoint.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because you look at Matt Cain, Madison Bumgarner, Buster Posey, Hunter Pence, Javier Lopez, Jeremy Affeldt, some of these guys, they never went to free agency. They were all locked up with extensions from the Giants, and except for Bumgarner, of course, pretty much paid at or above market level. And it was a sign of respect, and hey, we love you guys, we want to keep you here. Pablo is coming into his negotiations for an extension this past spring, and they offer him 3 years, $40 million. And they rebut and say, no, we want Hunter Pence money. And the Giants said, okay, yeah, we'll talk after the season. And now, ironically, after the season, he has a decent season, another historic postseason, and the Giants not only give him Hunter Pence money, they give him more than Hunter Pence money, which is exactly what Bosser offered him. And it's just interesting to me because Willie and I, as you know, Ben, in the preseason podcast back in March, we were screaming at the Giants. We were throwing eggs at them going, what the hell? Give him Hunter Pence money right now. And Jen and Chelena and I think even you to some extent were kind of poo-pooing that. We're just that's too much money for Pablo. Too much money for Pablo.
I was at least iffy on it. And even now, I'm like, I definitely, after the way that the year sort of ended, because, you know, obviously nobody was particularly bullish on Pablo the first month.
No.
But
yeah, that first month was pretty god awful.
No matter how many. No
Willie
and
I looked really bad that first month. We were like, oh, maybe.
Thank you for not signing him.
But I mean, I still don't know that it was the right amount of money to give him. But when you looked at it, the third, like, you don't forget the other thing that really affected us. And it's not that he's bad by any means.
No.
But the fact remains, the free agent market for third baseman is really thin.
And that's what we were talking about, too. We forecasted the free agent because, you know, you just look on the paper. And we said, other than Chase Headley, who the hell is out there? We said, Juan Uribe. You know?
Yeah, it's Pablo.
So it was more Headley, insurance for, the upcoming free agency.
Maybe McGahee and everybody else.
Yeah, and so I'm just wondering, because the Giants did offer extensions at or above market value, except for Bumgarner, of course, which that was a steal, maybe there is a little bit of grain of truth to Pablo feeling a little bit spurned. I don't believe in all the weight issue and panda camp and all that bullshit, because I think he's going to face that wherever he goes. I think there could be a grain of truth to the whole, God damn it, guys, you spread the love early to all these other players. And to me, World Series MVP, Mr. Three Home Run? No. You know, you didn't do that. You didn't show me the love. And he had a good season. You know, it was above average, I guess, for a third baseman.
I don't think that alone would be the factor. But sure, I mean, there's so many things that could be a factor. You could kind of, you could talk about them until you're blue in the face.
I'm blue.
But, well, there you go. Pixar didn't happen. But it's, you know, it's hard to say, like, well, this is the one straw that did it. And that's really what the subversive theory has kind of come down to, is it's people yelling about it like, if we had just insert thing here, we would still have a Pablo today. And it's like, no, I mean, after a certain point, it's a combination of, you can't have seen the future. Nobody but maybe the guys in that clubhouse knew that they were going to win the World Series this year. And the ones that insisted just blindly on every other year stuff, which turned out they were right. Good for them. Yeah. But, you know, after a certain point, if you love it, let it go. And I don't know that I think I think it would be impossible for me to say I strictly think that Panda is working on I need a new challenge here. Like, there's so much more that always plays into these things.
Just like any life decision we all make, right?
Right.
It's never just one thing.
Right. I mean, there's always one overriding factor, and then there's a bunch of stuff that you use as confirmation bias to tell yourself that you're right in doing the thing you're doing. But that's
a totally different discussion if the Giants lose to Pittsburgh in the wild card game.
True. Because we don't see any of the things that Panda does.
We don't see the postseason magic again.
Right. And so, like, everything that happened in playing out and deciding he needed a new challenge, maybe he wouldn't have decided he needed a new challenge. Because I think that half the reason they gave him 3 for 40 at the beginning is they're saying, look, we know you're good, but we can't pay you like the other guys. Because 1 year, you stunk up the joint. We had to yank you from the starting lineup during the World Series. Yes, you came through the other time. But look, these guys have been coming through for us consistently this whole time. Show us consistency. Yeah. So I could totally see he's scorned in that aspect. But I think the Giants were dead right to do that.
Right. Yeah. No, and I understand both sides of this. I really do. You know, I certainly didn't want to sign him earlier in the year if it meant that he was going to break a newly created hamate bone somewhere else in his body, or balloon to 350 pounds. You know, just because he wasn't listening to them and not being able to play a good third base, or maybe even 2 years from now if they had signed him, maybe he would be too heavy and he would lose a step at third base and all those things.
He might have started. Yeah, he might have started tuning out the coaches. He might have regretted it and been demanding a trade and brooding. You remember the team had to come to him.
Yeah,
yeah, but you remember the players had to come to him, and it was towards the end of last season.
Yeah,
I believe.
Posey.
Right, it was Posey and some guys, and they basically said, dude, sack up. We got to do some things together as a team. And to me, that's why I mentioned what I mentioned earlier. I think that to him, he'd rather be the guy telling somebody else to get it together than being told to get it together.
Well, I think it's going to be real interesting to see what happens over the next 5 years in Boston. I think that fans are going to embrace him at first. It can be a notoriously tough crowd, not as bad as Philly, but it is New England. And if he starts off in that similar April-May slump like he did this year, ooh, the boo birds are going to be coming out. We spent $95 million on this guy for what? Yeah, it's not going to be very good.
Honey, where's the car? We're leaving.
He packed the car in the driveway.
My thing, though, based on what you said about Pittsburgh, which is a really good point, Eric, are you saying that Pablo owes his entire Boston contract to Brandon Crawford?
Well, he owes it to the fact that he had a chance, so yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. Thank
you. I mean, so Brandon, not expect, talking, to, kind
of, expect to get a Rolex at some point, is it? No.
Well, one bright silver lining we can look at and talk about right now is, well, they have all that fat money that they were willing to give Panda, and they have that to redistribute to other desperate needs on this team. And one of them, of course, is starting pitching. They really, really are thin going into next year. And
it's so strange. We wouldn't have said that we were thin if we had looked at this, you know, a year ago.
No, not at all. But things change
quickly.
Things change quickly in the major leagues, and they have really changed quickly for the Giants. The fact that they won the World Series with that Frankenstein patchwork of a starting rotation and one Herculean effort by one is astounding. You rarely see that, and we'll get to an award that he got later in the show, and that's one of the reasons why he did. But, of course, the main free agent that the Giants are now involved in talks with is Jonathan Lester, and
I didn't see that one coming at first. We do need starting pitching, and the Panda talks got so big that all of a sudden they were like, well, now we're turning to John Lester, and I went, wait, what?
Yeah, and honestly, by the time that most of you are listening to the show, you'll know if Lester is with the Giants or not. This is Monday night, and apparently the decision is going to be by tomorrow, Tuesday, and we'll know. And the latest and greatest have purportedly said that the Giants and Cubs are his final two options or choices. And there's
but
even
the
been
Yankees might come in the background.
Yeah,
right. They always in. Might.
Hey, you know,
after all, they did just lose David Robertson to the White Sox literally a few minutes ago, apparently.
Yeah. So, I mean, stranger things have happened in baseball. But, you know, they're talking north of 140 and for 5 years.
Yeah.
And man, that's insane money.
It's so hard. I heard 7 years was being mumbled at one point.
Oh God! See now,
we
cannot do Barry Zito all over
because he's a. It's not because he's a lefty, and it has nothing to do with his ability. Because, well, honestly, Lester is still a pretty damn decent pitcher. But yeah, I have shades of Zito strictly just because once burned, twice shy, 7 years.
Yeah. Now, 7 years, I think, would hopefully the Giants, in my personal opinion, would bow out if that's what they were demanding. But the guy's 30 years old, so a 7-year contract, you know.
Not totally unreasonable if he goes the Tim Hudson route, but you never know if he's going to go the Tim Hudson route or if he's going to go, you know, completely different. Or for all we know, John Lester is the next Jamie Moyer waiting to happen. You never really can tell with some of these pitchers that have shown some longevity.
The thing that kind of concerns me is, you know, he's an American League pitcher, so you look at his stats and you kind of go, okay, you kind of shave a few tenths of things off of all these stat categories moving to the National League. I think we can all sort of agree on that. His career ERA is 3.58. If you exclude the first couple years, it was over 4. That's fine. But this year was by far his best year as a professional. And I'm just worried that because he's consistent in the sense of he's always had a 3-point or a 4-point ERA somewhere. But this year he had a 2.46 combined with Boston and Oakland. I mean, just an outstanding year. And he's riding that into this mega contract. And I always get concerned that I don't think any Giants fan is actually thinking he's going to duplicate a 2.46 ERA in the National League next year.
Nope.
And I hope no one expects that if we do sign him. But is that his high watermark for his career? And if it is, any team that's getting him is overpaying for him. They still may get a quality pitcher, but not at that level of contract. But the Giants do need another arm in that rotation. They do have the payroll to do it. And I think they're actually coming off their last year of payments for the stadium next year or 2 years from now. I think it's maybe 2016. So they're going to be flush with cash for the next, 10 years. So they can afford this. And so, I mean, you guys, are you excited about this? Or do you think if they sign him for 5-140, 5-145, do you think that's a good thing?
Lock him up. I want him. I want him and Bumgarner to be at the head of the Giants rotation, because you're talking about moving from the American League to the National League, shaving things off. His ERA was 2.46 this year, but the years before that, 3.75, 4.82, then 3.47, 3.25, 3.41, 3.21.
Very consistent.
He can stay around a Right. He can stay around a 3 ERA. His whip is 1.276. You know, that might drop down to something like 1.1. And Bumgarner is a 1.135 in his career. So you can very easily see those things translate. I think people are more scared off and not as all in on it as the Giants seem to be, just because of the A's stuff at the end of the year last year. I say I'm all in on him. I'll give him, 5 years at least. I don't go 7.
What about you, Ben?
I mean, but it does occur to me in the back of my head that it's just like, if Lester doesn't go here, he's a Dodger. It's because that's just what they do.
Preventative move, right?
Yeah, realistically, realistically, he doesn't go here. I'd be thinking that
it's
he'd
like a
be
cock
like
block
Sox,
or something.
Sox or Cubs. But it's on some level, you always think. I should point out the Cubs have been scooping up damn near everybody. That's been insane.
Well, guess who their GM is? I mean, Jesus.
Yep. Yep. Well, the Cubs are doing what the Mariners did last year, and it kind of worked out for the Mariners almost.
It
got
one.
Them to within, really. So, yeah. I mean, I will say with Lester, my issue for me, I think, is that I just haven't had as many opportunities to watch Lester. Because you know how when names get bandied around, there's a certain kind of, there's either a certain reputation that goes with them or a certain experience you recall. Or in some cases, you hear a name and you go, my God, that man carved us up for 5 years and I had to watch all of it. So when we got Jake Peavy, for example.
Yeah.
But it's, there are certain names. With Lester, for me, he's good. And it's one of those ones where it's a rep thing. It's not an experience thing. Right. And so my gut doesn't follow me into this land of, yes, we do need a starting pitcher. Lester is one of the best ones on the market right now easily. Yeah, that's the thing that we should go for. Yeah, okay, so my head agrees with that. I don't know if it agrees $140 worth, but that's just because or $140 million worth, but that's just because my brain can't wrap itself around that number. I mean, we have the technology. We have the money to do it. Like, there's nothing wrong with going in on that. It's just such a... holy crap, man. It's like, yeah, let's just throw $140 million at this guy. That ought to work out great. But it's like my heart just kind of goes, oh, yeah, we're going to throw a ton of money at John Lester. Okay. And, it's one of those ones where if we do it, I'm all in on it. Like, let's, if we do it, then all right, that means that we've got, potentially a heeled Kane, Madison Bumgarner,
Timmy and Hudson.
Yeah, Hudson and Lester, and probably that's Tim Lincecum as a fifth starter.
Yeah.
Even with the exception of how he pitched at the second half of last year, teams would kill for Tim Lincecum as a fifth starter. Okay, no, let's take that back. With the exception of like the last 3 years of pitching, teams might go for Tim Lincecum as a fifth starter still, but it's not the same. Like now, at this point, they'd be like just trying to see if they could conveniently stab each other with forks. They wouldn't be going all in with the like, swords here.
Well, you know, it's interesting how this is all going to play out, because I think if the Giants are successful in landing Lester, I think you close the door on, and I know this could break your heart, but probably no Vogie and no Peavy.
I think I'm already anticipating no Vogie, to be honest. He just didn't close out his last campaign well, like strongly enough
to warrant consideration. He really struggled.
Yeah, and not to warrant consideration against the other things going on in the club. I mean, when Jake Peavy has talked himself into better consideration than you, he's kind of like, all right, well, that's already one guy that probably would be willing to sign for not a ton of money or a long contract who, you know, and if the Giants needed an emergency fifth or even if they just needed a fifth starter at all and said, you know what, Lincecum goes back to bullpen duty for now because we don't know how to fix him.
Yeah, and I saw on Twitter today, it was Vogie and I think the Twins were talking or something. And then
yeah,
Peavy and the Marlins as well. It doesn't mean that they're signing. It just means they're talking.
Yeah.
I do think that if Lester signs, it's going to be, you know, Bum, Lester, Kane, Hudson, and Timmy is going to be the rotation. And they would not need the services of Vogie and Peavy anymore. And they have Petit as a long guy and backup starter for any one of those guys who goes down. I think Bum's going to be solid. Lester hasn't had any injury history, which is a good thing. Zito didn't either, though. We sometimes wanted him to be injured, didn't we?
He was remarkably durable.
Incredibly durable. It was just he wasn't good
about that.
Because he threw it like 50 miles an hour.
Yeah, pretty much.
Moyer was also quite durable.
And, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. When you don't put much strain on your arm.
Matt Cain.
Thing about Lester that,
oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, did you guys know that he is 3-0 in the World Series as a starting pitcher?
Yes. Yeah. Did you also know that he hasn't thrown to first base in over 2 years?
True, but I mean, that doesn't let guys get there.
That's weird. That's just very odd.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, I was just saying, like, I mean, you got to consider that if this would earn Pablo his money and we talk about, you know, credibility and what jumps out with Lester, is it reputation? Well, I mean, that's where the rep got built, I guess.
Yeah.
That and he beat cancer.
No, right, yeah. That was a big one. Yeah.
So then you're going to get the, John's a fighter.
Yeah.
That's true.
I'm curious what nickname. Okay, so first question. What nickname do you think Bruce Bochy gives John Lester if he were to sign? Johnny.
Yeah, I was going to say Johnny because you can't really do anything with Lester.
I really just want it to be Lesty somehow.
Yeah, Lesty.
There's no way that works.
That doesn't work. No. Nope.
No. What about, okay, so let's say the Giants sign Chase Headley. What do you think?
Headley E.
Heady.
Chasey.
Great job tonight, Heady.
Right, no, I do think
I needed to do that.
I do think Giants, in my own opinion, should go for Lester right now. They are a big market team now, not at the level of the Yankees or the Dodgers, but they're up there, and I think this is what
they
need to do.
They're pushing it a lot more than I think we give them credit for a lot of the time.
Yeah, they've escaped the Zito contract finally, because last year he was still getting paid. I hope everyone remembers that. He got paid $20 million. No, I guess it was $20 million. It was $5 million buyout for this past year?
Something like that.
Or $7 million. It was $7 million buyout.
It was closer to that.
So anyway, we're still paying him for this past year. We have Panda money freed up. I just think that this would be a good move because they've had so many issues with the starting rotation the past couple of years, just with a little bit of the injury bug that it not only gives you a solid, solid 1-2. And can you imagine? Matt Cain has been the horse and durable and amazing throughout his entire career until this past year and a half, when clearly those bone spurs, which he's had apparently all of his career, finally moved and got in the way, and they removed him. And I've heard a lot of people worried about, oh my God, is he going to come back and he's going to be the same Matt Cain? It's like, look, guys, it was not Tommy John surgery. He had some bone spurs removed.
No.
He's structurally the same guy. Nothing is different. In fact,
I mean,
I'm
anytime
it's a little
there's
bit
surgery,
like,
sure you wonder, but it's not like there's a new ligament in there. It's just there's just less crap floating around.
There's just less crap floating around to irritate the ligaments, which is the issue he was having. So hopefully, it's more like the rookie, and he suddenly has a super arm and he could throw 110. But no, I'm really excited about his durability. Is going to be hopefully back this year, and he's going to be back to the old Matt Cain. And if that's the 1-2-3 punch, holy crap, that's
right.
That would be solid. I think the Giants would be certainly favorites with the Dodgers to win the West again. But Moving on, we have some other holes to fill, and namely the outfield. Of course, Michael Morse last year was just signed to that one-year contract, and for $6 million, despite his injuries, it certainly was well worth the dollars, because not only was he a fan favorite,
and, exactly,
and my favorite interview when we interviewed him back in January,
absolutely,
February.
That was a great one. But, I mean, Morse is just he's a well-spoken, interesting, crazy dude.
But just a fun guy, and just he had clutch hits. He started the season obviously hot with the power, and he had his injuries, which we were all afraid of. But he wasn't injured as much as he had been in the past, and he had incredible clutch hits in the postseason. As it turned out, yeah, he coming off the bench a few games in left field, he picked the right spot and the right time to deliver his RBI singles, his tying home run. I mean, it was fantastic. Again, a key member, a key cog of this machine. But the question is, he certainly is worth well more north of his $6 million contract. He has many suitors right now, apparently. There's 3 or 4 teams talking to him. And I don't think the Giants are actively pursuing him right now. I've heard like zero chatter about his agent talking to the Giants. And I don't know if
you've heard
anything differently. And is that because the Giants are either waiting or they're just like, look, Mike thinks it was great, but we need someone else.
I mean, I
think it's because they're all in on Lester right now that we're not going to hear anything.
I think that's part of it, yeah. And I think that when you look at where they're hurting, I think that left field is relatively low on the priority list, to be honest. And well, with Morse, you're looking at left field or first base, and I don't think that either of those are positions that we're particularly desperate to shore up right now.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be nice? Yeah, but I think that we're prioritizing third base and starting pitching.
Yeah, I do agree with you on that one. I'm just, you know, the radio silence either, I mean, it could hurt them in the sense of Morse signs before the Giants even contact or have any kind of contact with Michael Morse's agent. But these guys have a tendency to draw these things out to kind of see who's going to set the market value, I guess you could say. And he does have a lot of suitors potentially interested right now, so they might be just playing it close to the vest and letting this thing string out. And I do believe, probably in his heart, he would love to come back to San Francisco if they wanted him. And of course, that's the big if. And I think you guys are right. I think the Giants do have to wait to see how Lester is going to play out. Because if Lester does sign with the Giants, obviously that hurts the chances for the Giants re-signing Michael Morse, because they're just not going to have the same dollars available. If they lose out on Lester, I think they would bring Morse back. Because the other options, let's talk about them, aren't really that sexy out there. Obviously, the... they're rumored to be in the hunt for Markakis, but he went to the Braves.
Right.
But now in the
probably
last week,
probably just as well.
Yeah, just as well. I wasn't particularly fond of him anyway.
I want Melky.
And that's what I was going to hit up on, man, because they've been talking. They have been talking.
Yeah. And I want him.
I do not like the way that Melky left this team and the way he betrayed the players with his lies, but at the same time, there are players that have come out and said, oh, I'd take Melky back in a heartbeat, because they did like the guy in the clubhouse. He was a good presence in the outfield, a good defender. You know, the guy hits 300 almost every year. He's the one, well, not the one, but he helped the Giants win the West in 2012, despite the fact that he wasn't on the postseason roster. But I wouldn't mind having him back personally, but I'm wondering, between you two guys, you know, Ben first, what do you think that would cause any animosity or strife or PR issues for the Giants if they re-signed him because of his whole, you know, banned substance issues?
PR issues, maybe. But the thing is, I mean, the issue is we've barely run into Melky at all because he's been playing in Toronto.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's done more and hasn't apparently been re-caught for totally failing at hiding his tracks with the performance-enhancing substances. So, I mean, it's sort of like, you know, when you look at the list of outfielders right now, like Cruz is already off the market. Torii Hunter wouldn't be welcome here and also is already off the market.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to sign Scott Hairston.
He'd end up killing someone on the bench just because
you're not Scott.
That'd be the only way
someone else would get him.
You know what? He would just walk through the bullpen and accidentally crush the toes and fingers and arms of all the pitchers in there and go, oh my God, he's still killing the Giants.
He's still a Giants destroyer.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're not going to, you know, like this team, which is now in a position of looking for Not necessarily. We're not necessarily looking for young talent. We're trying because we've actually gotten a little better at growing some of that ourselves, particularly with pitching.
Yeah.
But we are looking for people that we can sort of wrap up for a little bit longer that have shown some skill. So I mean, that doesn't, you know, that removes Ichiro from the equation, which I think is a shame, and that removes Soriano from the equation, which is fine.
Yeah, he retired anyway. He's done.
Yeah, that's true. I'd forgotten about that. Thank you.
He retired.
But what does that leave you with? Like, maybe Colby Rasmus? That's a weird thought.
To be honest, like, if
it leaves you with Melky and Alex Rios.
Yeah, it does. For the most part. We've already had the whole Alex Rios dance before.
Many times, but this time we wouldn't be giving up Tim Lincecum for him. So on the other hand,
Timmy, yeah.
we've already up on Tim Lincecum, but I hope we change our minds on that.
It could leave the Ishii Perez platoon.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Or, depending on what health Pagan is in, we could be seeing Blanco in left, or we could see Blanco and Ishii in left, depending.
I was going to mention that. If no one can guarantee this, but if you had a crystal ball and you could say Angel Pagan is not going to get hurt this year.
No. What you do is Angel Pagan is not going to start the year hurt. That's what you go with.
In the fantasy world of Angel Pagan not getting hurt for the year, you know, like in a video game or something like that, I actually have no problem with Blanco being the full-time left fielder.
Going to get hurt playing a video game. Stupid video games.
I know, stupid video game. But I think that's where the weakness is exposed, because he is kind of a fourth outfielder playing in the third outfield spot. They can cover that up with a lot of the lineup. But it's once Pagan goes down, which we saw time and time again, then you got Blanco as your number two outfielder, and then you got the, you know, Perez and Ishii and all the other guys coming up to fill in left field. And it's just, that's where their offense just failed and just plummeted from there.
Did make a good point though. They said, the issue isn't like if it's Pence, Pagan, and Blanco or Perez, that's actually a pretty good position.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is when it turns into Blanco and Perez.
That's exactly right. That's when Pagan
and
goes
inevitably
down. That's the
issue. It does.
Yeah, inevitably, it has both years that Pagan's been with, or all 3 years that Pagan's been with the Giants.
So I think a lot of it depends on, like, remember, they did tender Ishikawa a contract.
They did, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't remember if he, I think that he had just about all but signed it. I don't remember if he had. But, tendering the contract pretty much says, hey, we're keeping you around.
Mm-hmm.
And Ishikawa is sticking around, or at least they're intending to keep Ishikawa around, suggests that he's a part of the plans going forward. And I don't think that they just want him as a, you know, pinch hit standby first baseman. I think that his performance in the postseason as a only sometimes sucked left fielder is, I think that's something that you consider.
If you can trust Ishikawa in left field in the fucking World Series, I think you can
trust
play
him
a
during
few
the,
day games in April.
In the regular season when you need him. I think at this point he's shown that he at least knows how to not completely look like a confused, you know, drunken lunatic in left field. Not any more than Mike Morse did, but he was kind of a confused drunken lunatic anyway, I imagine.
Yeah, he was like that anyway, but...
Well, I guess I remember seeing somewhere where he said, yeah, I'll work on it in the off season and blah, blah, blah. You know, in the back of his mind, he's got to be thinking, fuck it. If I can catch on as a starting left fielder now, who cares?
If I can parlay left field into staying in the bigs and not going back to, Sacramento now.
Sacramento,
that's weird. Fresno has actually already changed a bunch of their logos and branding and stuff to match
the Astros.
Houston.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's a strange, strange thing, but good for them. For still being a Fresno, around as Fresno, but you know, it, like if you manage to parlay left field in the World Friggin' Series and an awesome, you know, walk off home run into I get to stay up and not ride buses and sleep on in floor, you know, awkward floors and airbeds for a year. Okay, great. I'm going to work on left field. No problem. I'll see you guys in April.
Yeah,
or in March.
So, I mean, come April, he's going to be able to get his World Series ring in an actual uniform on the active roster as opposed to coming in his jeans like he did in 2010.
Yep. Which, about time.
It was kind of sad. I don't know why, but I just...
Was already sad, and at least that made, you know, like, that was okay. Like, Ishikawa was still playing.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Yeah, it was just, it was odd. But anyway... Good for Ishii, but yeah, limited options in left field. I think, like you guys said, we're going to wait to see what happens with Lester, and then depending on that, they're going to go from there. But
I think there's a lot of dominoes that are going to be falling when it comes to free agents, and I think Lester right now is obviously the current big one because it's so close to being completed. But I think that after Lester, pretty much the Chase Headley, I think, becomes the big domino. And I think that once Chase Headley falls, whether it's with us or somewhere else, I think a whole lot of other stuff starts immediately beginning to drop into place.
And I haven't heard anything about this. Because
we've now hit most of the reliever dominoes too. I think Romo is one of the big ones left as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we haven't even talked about that because there's been no movement on that. No talk about that. Yeah,
absolutely.
Those are the kind of I don't want to call him B-level. He's not a B-level player, but as far as free agent, you know, sexiness, I guess you could say, he's a little down on the list. So sometimes that stuff kind of waits to settle out. I haven't heard anything. I don't know if you guys have, but if the Giants do not sign Lester, Has there been any connection to Scherzer and his agent? Or is that just like, no, he's going to the Yankees, he's going to, you know, whomever?
I've heard more about McCarthy than I have about Scherzer, I feel like, but I don't know if that was an actual connection or just people trying to draw links between McCarthy and the Giants.
Right. Yeah.
Which I wouldn't be sorry about.
Yeah, I've seen more questions of why there is no connection to Scherzer if they lose out on Lester and
I'm just curious.
In the Lester basket. I have no idea.
Apparently, we're now hearing, according to John Heyman, Lester has 6-year and 7-year offers.
Holy crap. Yep. Well, if the Giants are one of the final two teams and he just said 6- and 7-year offers, I mean,
one of those is probably us.
One of those is probably the Giants. And that scares the poop out of me. Hopefully,
hey guys,
it's the 6-year one.
Paul Mahomes on the market.
So, Paul Mahomes. All right. So, I guess we can talk about, like you guys brought up, really the number two hole, priority hole, is third base, vacated by Panda. And there's just nothing out there except for Chase Headley. We lost out on, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on the guy's name, the Cuban that just signed with the Diamondbacks.
Yasmani Tomas.
Yeah, Tomas, yeah. And I know there was talk about he could be an outfielder, he could be an infielder, so he had some adaptability and flexibility in where he could go because he was so young.
Yeah.
And the Giants did put an offer for him, but Arizona and Tony La Russa, now running that show, won out. So I'm not, besides his 2012 season, I'm not really enamored with Chase Headley. And to me, he's kind of subpar defense. And because of the paucity of third baseman, the market's going to certainly, I mean, he's going to get paid a pretty penny. And
Chase is, I'm sure, just like out of his mind over the Pablo contract, just going like, well, good, I can't get that because there is no way in hell I get that, which means, great, I can be like, look at what a bargain you're getting at, like, you know, 4 years, like 65.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and like 4 years, 65 for Chase Headley?
But I mean, it's kind of like, you know, going and
who else is on the market?
Going to Baskin Robbins and they're kind of out of your three favorite flavors and the fourth one is there and you're kind of like, well, I don't hate it.
I really like that one.
Yeah, I don't hate it, but usually. I gotta pay the same for it because I'd rather pay less because I don't like it as much. And anyway, I just think that it's kind of better than nothing. But at the same time, you know, do the Giants want to fork out $15 million a year for this guy?
When you look at who's on the market, and that's the entire problem, is looking at who's on the market. Unless you want to sign Jack Hanahan, Chase Headley is probably one of the best options out there, and certainly one of the more consistent ones.
Because there's a huge drop off between him and anyone else.
Well, and the problem is, if you were to like make a chart of like WAR of the third baseman, just like average WAR over the last 3 years, you know, you're looking at just like, Pablo is just like towering over everybody. And then you've got Chase Headley. And then things just kind of start just really quickly. It just like that just really just got right out of hand. And so, I mean, when you look at those up, like the problem is you have to look at both. You say, well, should we be trying to trade for a third baseman? Is that what should be happening? Should we be trying to trade for a starting pitcher? Who do we have that we can give away to do that? You know, this is not a super heavy trading team. Sabian will usually pick one thing. But the free agent options pretty much at this point, like it's Chase Headley and it pretty much ends after Chase Headley. And then you're just kind of like picking up pieces, searching through SCAP, putting Joaquin Arias at third base, promoting Mac Williamson after he has a chance to come back from like TJ surgery. There's just sort of this rotating cast of meh.
Yeah. No, it really is. And I've heard people, Matt Duffy, if Scudero's healthy, he'll play third. It's like, those aren't realistic options, people. There's no way the Giants are counting on that.
No.
That could be a D-Day option.
It'd be really interesting
but
to see.
They're not planning on that.
Scudero go to third with Panic at second and go, well, Missed your shot on that, fella.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, we do have an option in house, guys. I just don't know if I like it.
Yeah. I'll tell you what I think. You're talking about the numbers. I'll tell you the conclusion I've come to as a fan of the Giants and just a fan of baseball.
Sign everyone.
The market has bared out that $15 million is not what it used to be. Yep. And you know what? They've won 3 and 5, and they're going to continue to print money. Sign all the best that you can right now. I want to keep winning championships. Yeah, this is fun.
Hey, it's not my money. Go ahead. Do it.
Exactly. It's not my money. You know, it is my money a little bit.
I mean, a little of my money is in there somewhere. If I squint, I can see it.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's not my money. Do I really give a flying fuck if it's $15 or $14 million a year that somebody gets? No, I don't care. And his family in 50 years probably doesn't care.
Yeah.
Nope. So that's totally my mentality. It sounds like a Yankee mentality, but it's totally my mentality. Sign whoever the hell you can. Throw the money at them. I don't care. Keep this going. Yeah. You've got Buster. You've got Bumgarner. You've got Kane. You got great core. Keep it going.
You know, I think part of it is we keep talking about, well, with the money that they were going to throw at Pablo, they can. We don't know where this money ends, man. Look at the way that they've just payroll has grown and grown and grown, and it's not growing at the same rate as inflation. Like, you're not seeing it line up with the way that every other team's payroll is growing. It's because we've been successful. But you're right. They're basically printing money right now. And so I don't know if it's just out of habit or if it's just out of just like gut reaction going, my God, how can that possibly be worth $95 million? Where I can't make myself say, why, yes, we can just print money and hand it out to everybody. I can't make myself do that. But when you look, you step back and you look at how the Giants do their offseason, that's it. They print a bunch of money. They maybe make one trade. They pick up a couple of random-ass minor league and non-roster invites that end up completely blowing up. And ta-da, you've made a team.
Right.
They don't do a ton of trading. They're not the A's. They're not the Rays. They have money to throw at problems. And so Sabian pretty much jams a bunch of money in one of those confetti cannons from the parade and says, Chase Headley!
Well, apparently, it's been all over Twitter tonight, but he said he will decide on what team he's going to sign with by the end of the winter meetings, but probably he's waiting for Lester and guys like that to set off the wave of activity. But I guess he does have a 4-year, $65 million offer on the table right now with an unnamed team. So I wonder who that might
be. What, Lester?
Headley.
Headley.
Sorry if I said Lester.
I think it's the Yankees. I think the Yankees.
I would imagine it's the Yankees. Yeah, it's the Giants and Yankees that have pretty much had the ties to him so far. So, but I mean, I agree with you. I would, if it was 4 years, 65, I'd probably just do it. Just do it.
Yeah. That's how I feel about all of this. It's not my fucking money. Go pay them. You know?
Yeah. No, you were right on there.
I don't know how I did that. I wrote an article. Give Pablo all the money. I don't care.
Yep. Yeah. That was a good one because you had a good point. Like, it's not our money. We're emotionally invested in Pablo as a fan base, and that is something that you can monetize from their standpoint. Right. And, well, you know, there was nobody better on the market at third base. Nobody.
Yeah. Nah. Seeing that weird, creepy panda standing next to him in the Boston jerseys at Fenway, that was a little weird, but
he'll regret it in 3 years.
We'll see. I mean, I think that's a distinct possibility. I really, really do. But it remains to be seen.
For his sake, I hope not.
No, exactly. I like the guy, and
like,
for his
there are
sake,
some people that probably want to be vindictive about it, and I think that
he needs to fail. I want to be so sweet. If he fails, I'm gonna.
Yeah, and you know it's like, come on. With a guy that enjoys baseball as much as Pablo, if you're trying to get your Schadenfreude from him and not from Scott Hairston. Yeah. And like watching Shane Victorino fall over in the outfield, you're really doing baseball wrong, man. You're just not going about this the right way. Like, you gotta be sitting there and waiting for Yasiel Puig to just like crash into a wall and fall on his ass and be fine, but extremely embarrassed and mocked on national television. Yeah. I can deal with that kind of Schadenfreude, but you know, don't touch Panda. We're still pretty protective of him. I know I am.
Yep.
Yeah, it's not like Brian Wilson going to the Dodgers.
I probably was just for the first 2 years of his contract, to be honest. I'll be like, Boston, don't you mistreat Panda. Like, he's been gone for a year and a half, and shut up.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, I guess that's pretty much the free agent discussions that have been going on with the Giants and who they've been linked to recently. But as far as what's happened the last couple of weeks, one of those things that happened today, I think, took all three of us by surprise.
I did not see that coming at all.
I don't think anyone saw this coming, but Sports Illustrated, of course, I think they've done it 14 years now, have had their annual Sportsman of the Year. It's pretty prestigious.
Oh, no, they've
award.
Done the Sportsman. They've done the Sportsman of the Year since they started.
You're right. I'm sorry. It's the last 14 were in the video. My apologies. That was released today.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So they've been doing this for a long time. And
sorry,
it's a pretty,
I'm a big SI guy.
No, I totally good. When I was a kid and a teenager, I still have boxes of old SIs when like Shaq was still with LSU. And, you know, the next big thing in the NBA, I have all those old ones. It's pretty cool.
And he literally was.
And he literally was. Sports Illustrated named Madison freaking Bumgarner as their Sportsman of the Year. And I think to all of us, he's clearly our Sportsman of the Year. I mean, my God, the guy is elevated to a new level.
To anybody that watched baseball and isn't from Kansas City, he was Sportsman of the Year. Because every time he came out in the World Series, like, people that I didn't know or people that weren't Giants fans or people that weren't baseball fans that just live in San Francisco were like, oh, this is crazy. It's absolutely electric.
Yeah.
And that's not like, if it was enough to just have one of the most calm, mellow guys on the team come out of the bullpen and, well, I guess mellow isn't really the right word, but one of the most like level, just, you know, like just flat face and just nothing. And he comes out of the bullpen and people that don't watch baseball go nuts. He's made an impact.
He's made an impact. And I think, yeah, I was not really that aware because, you know, I was a little hermit, you know, being in my my house.
We're used to flipping out about Bumgarner because it's just what you do.
Yeah, it's our little, you know, we assume East Coast bias and no one's watching and the whole thing. But that's what he did. And this is proof right here because he won this award. He transcended the sport of baseball, because this isn't the baseball player of the year. This is the sportsman of the year. The athlete that Sports Illustrated thought had the biggest impact on the game. And there's a lot of different attributes they list there, but that's pretty incredible. We knew we had a historic postseason, one for the ages. And I think it's really, really cool that Sports Illustrated recognized this, because we do always talk about East Coast bias and we're never, right. You know, Giants, West Coast sports are never recognized. Right. But this is definitely the one of those outliers that none of us saw coming. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty stoked about it. You know, it's not like winning the World Series, but, you know.
We saw it as a huge thing, but we didn't realize other people saw it as a huge thing, too. Yeah. You know, like to us, it was just kind of Mad Bum being Mad Bum and like, whoa.
And
it was a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a huge deal for us, but you get used to these things being huge deals for your team. You forget that every once in a while, like this team is good enough that there's inevitably somebody on that team is going to do something that makes the rest of the nation go, wait, what? And this one made the rest of the nation go, holy shit. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so interesting having friends at work being like, man, Bumgarner, like, it's unfair, man. And I was like, wait, you watch baseball? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, he had a huge impact. And I wasn't expecting it. I thought it was going to be, you know, I don't know, Popovich, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't have been surprised if it was Greg Popovich. Just like, no, here's Madison Bumgarner in a cornfield on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Wait, what?
Yeah, it was actually, there was this great article written by, who was it? I have a link to it somewhere. I'll find it, put it in the show notes or at least on our website. But it linked to a bunch of Royals fans' tweets about the announcement today. Some of them were freaking hilarious, but one of them, I'm going to butcher it, and it's definitely not verbatim. But it was something to the effect of, oh, that's it. Yeah, put Madison Bumgarner in a field of wheat from the Midwest to
like
just rub.
Conquered Kansas
yeah, like
City.
He's conquered Kansas City and rub this.
Like,
you know.
No, like he's from the. What?
Yeah, I know, of course. But I mean.
Right. But, you know, like
it was great.
When things still sting just a little bit and you just think that you started to get over them and all of a sudden there's Madison Bumgarner on your damn magazine rack and every freaking drugstore you walk into. Yeah, okay, that's going to hurt.
Yeah.
Like those opinions I respect. And those fans that still are hurt about it, I do not blame them, because if anything, I feel like Royals fans are going to sit on this for a while, be upset about this for a while, and then, quite frankly, that team is eventually going to go somewhere. They're getting better. Yeah. And it's going to be us in 2002 all over again. But for the Royals.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point. Yeah, it's definitely going to hurt those Royals fans
for a
long time.
We are the angels for Kansas City.
No, and I have to agree. It didn't happen in the exact same way, but the feeling is mutual. It's absolutely mutual. Yeah,
it's, I think it's just about as almost as crushing because of the way that they got there, more so than the way that they like. It's not like they had gotten ahead and then collapsed. They were a little bit behind all the time, but they had destroyed everything in the postseason coming up to there, and we handed them their first loss.
Yeah,
and so that excuse me, throat just dried out. Ben's but you know what you get. that's what having to talk about the Angels will do to me.
You get a little choked up, literally.
Choking on monkey fur.
I think Christopher Lloyd just reached his hand down my throat or something. Anyway.
Oh, man. How's Mike Socha?
Oh, that's even worse. Nobody needs that.
Dusty Baker.
Does anybody taste...
Dusty Baker shoving the game ball down your throat. Take it. Take it off the mound now.
Does anybody taste abused reliever? Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's such an interesting emotional arc to see that. Now, on the other hand, the people that responded saying, no, the Kansas City Royals fans were supposed to win Sportsman of the Year. I can't tell if they're being serious or not.
I thought it was a joke at first. I really did. I saw a few retweeted ones, and I was like, oh, that's a good one. I like that one. And then I saw a couple more tweets linking to an article. And then I read the article, which that guy, you know, nominated, quote unquote, the Royals as Sportsman of the Year. And then
the problem is when people think that counts as an actual nomination.
Right. And then you read all of the tweets related to that article, and you go, oh, my God, half these people are absolutely serious about their disappointment that the Kansas City Royals fans didn't win. I mean, it's like, first of all, a fan base should never win Sportsman of the Year, no matter what.
Nope.
That's just
absolutely
silly.
Not.
That's just like
a
you
team?
Said, Eric.
Maybe.
You know, well, gee, I could have won this award every year, you know, for 35
I've
years.
I've sat on my couch watching sports forever.
And second of all, and we talked about this a little bit in the pre-show before we started recording, but their attendance is nowhere close to the Giants. And in fact, I mean, they had a half-empty ballpark for a good portion of the year. Obviously, they were leading the Central, and the numbers started.
I was going
to
say, you know, not but like by the postseason they were outstanding, and I'll
no,
totally
by the postseason they were outstanding. But I mean, that's
sure.
the thing. It's like, okay,
but that's, does not,
let's go ahead and say the Sportsman of the Year award was awarded
awkward...
to fan bases. Even in that small little realm of awards, I still wouldn't give it to the Royal fans because I think that's the definition of bandwagon fan. Right there is the fact that you don't have these guys here in the beginning of the season or last year. You have them all show up near the end of the year when they're good and into the mm-hmm. postseason. And yes, they were energetic and fantastic and all that. But I remember Murph and Mac from KNBR. They went to Kansas City during the all the games out there. Mm-hmm. And they would always come back in the morning broadcasting live from Kansas City or back in San Francisco if they had flown back. And they had gone around the stadium and around the park and just gotten little interviews from everyone. And there were three or four interviews of Kansas City Royals fans where they were interviewing them going, yeah, Royals, we're going to win. Yeah. Well, and then, you know, Murph is starting to ask them very calm, pointed question. Oh, okay. Where are you from? How long have you been a Royals fan? Oh, 25 years. And I'm 25 years old. Oh, okay. When was the last time you came to a game? Well, I mean, it's been a while, but I'm still a Royals fan. Or he asked other questions like, who's their starting shortstop? Who's their starting right fielder? Like real basic questions. And he just got so many of these purported amazing rabid Kansas City fans who like hadn't been to a game in years until the World Series I know they're cherry picking, but
I was going to say, well, it's more like people do that with Giants fans at the park all the time. Because
I understand that too. But it's just one of those funny things where,
but you know,
you did see your smacks
some
of the
best fans in
that were serious. Yeah.
A little bit, which we all know how we at least like feel about best fans in baseball. Yeah. I feel like if you're going to give it to any fan base, you hand it to the Cubs and you just mm-hmm. come up with a really emotionally striking picture because there's really nothing to celebrate.
Oh my. Sorry, this is off tangent, but you know, what's his face from the New York Giants who made that incredible one-handed catch a couple weeks ago?
Odell Beckham.
Yeah, Beckham. And
OBJ.
And you saw all those memes of people photoshopping him into different scenes. And mm-hmm. it was like the Sistine Chapel and things like that, you know, touching the hand of God. There was one where he was right in front of Bartman catching the ball at Wrigley Field. It was fantastic.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that just gave me a chuckle.
Well played.
It was Moises Alou standing there backing off going, what? Stretched out catching the ball.
Why is Odell Beckham Jr. here?
Yeah.
See, I'll never forget where I was that night. I was living with Cubs fans. I'll never forget where I was that night. Wow.
Oh, my God.
That's great.
Oh, boy.
Right. Well, anyway, so that was pretty cool that he won.
That was Mad Bum. Yeah,
kudos to
start on Mad Bum.
I know, right? We went off there. So, well, okay, just a couple more things to wrap up the show. But one thing that happened a couple of weeks ago that went a little bit under the wire, but Tim Flannery, the Giants' third base coach, has officially stepped down. He has retired from baseball. He's not going to another team. But he wants to spend more time with his family and concentrate on his...
go out on his own terms while he's still got his health.
Exactly. He wants to go out on his own terms. He's won 3 rings in 5 years. He's had a long career. It's just one of those things where, you know, he just felt like it was the right time to step down. And I think, you know, we're going to miss him. And I, you know, liked his lunatic fringe or whatever, Tim Flannery Facebook page. And he's always posting really interesting things there. Real cerebral guy,
very
emotional
outspoken
guy. Very outspoken, yeah. Very, very cool, because you could really get some insights into the heartbeat of the team. And it was really cool to read down the playoff stretch, too, when he was talking about the energy of the team and his thoughts getting on the plane, that kind of stuff. So I'm kind of going to miss all that. And he's done some amazing off the field work too with Brian Stowe and all that fundraising and the music he's performed. Not only
that'll
by
probably
himself.
Continue, to be honest. And I,
oh
I,
no,
I'm
that
sure
will
that,
continue. Of
yeah,
course,
I'm sure there's no way that Flan doesn't stay a part of Giants culture, especially as long as Bochy is there.
Yeah,
because I mean those two are just they're just tight, and so there's no way. But yeah, he's not staying on. Like he's thinking, you know, from what I had heard, it's like, well, you know, maybe I'll help out the club a little bit, but not like daily grind road trips level.
Yeah,
I mean,
no, nothing like that.
And, you know, when you get down to it, I mean, who can blame him?
Yeah, and, you know, we're going to miss him running down the third baseline with the player almost all the way to home plate and staying safe and all that stuff. And certainly...
Was anybody else, like, more broken up about Flan leaving than about Panda leaving? Because I feel like a lot of people were.
I totally was.
Yeah, I mean...
I totally was. Well,
I might have been, because at least when Panda was leaving, I felt like, you know, we'll still see him around. He's off to do other things. And, like, so is Flan, but just the guy was such an emotional center for the team at times and just was such a constant presence out there, and one that you take for granted a little bit, almost more than Pablo, because he's, you know, you don't, like, comment or get upset about Flannery until like the one time he doesn't send somebody.
Right. Or he sends Buster Posey and he's thrown out 3 times in the World Series and playoffs.
Just never send Buster Posey.
Well, they won all the games, he get thrown out, so it's a sign. Yep.
So there was a method to the man's mad.
That's right.
Right. I just gotta make sure Buster
he
gets
just
thrown
wanted more
out.
Right. He wanted to get more runs thrown in on his resume, I think. to boost that total. It's funny with Flannery, you mentioned that I was more broken up because Pablo is a thing that we knew could happen.
Yeah.
Pablo was always a possibility in the back of our minds. Flan came out of left field, and it almost, since it came out the day after, it almost seemed like he waited for Pablo to do his thing and then told Sabian and Bochy that it's time for him to move on. So I think that's kind of why it kind of hit us more. And it was kind of uplifting to think about the day after Pablo went, because it was like, oh no, you know, we lost Pablo. And then you thought about the good spirit that we had. Like for me, Flan, it was a personal thing. I met him when I covered the game down here, the first ever game I covered down here in Tampa. And he was the guy that like totally disarmed me. I started talking to him and we just talked about music and like didn't even talk about baseball. And then all of a sudden the Rays were off the field and he had to go hit Fungos. And literally the conversation ended with, well, got to go hit Fungos now. And he, you know, trotted off. And we literally went Jackie Green, Grateful Dead. We talked about his lunatic fringe. We talked about stuff with Brian Stowe. Didn't talk about baseball once, you know what I mean? But like the rest of the day there, you guys know that press box feeling where you're freaked out. The rest of the day there, I was a lot less freaked out because that was the first conversation I had with somebody in uniform.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a great article that you wrote up. That was a Two Out Hits one, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was, that was fantastic.
So to me,
because
it's kind of like...
It's like Flan in a nutshell. That's exactly, I think, what we would have expected of a story about Tim Flannery.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's why, like, this social media, we see the connection more from people than with Pablo. Agreed. Pablo was like, he had to do something, and Flan just had to be Flan.
You know, it's kind of like Pablo was a character. You know, obviously not a likable guy. Pablo was a character, but Flan had character, you know? Yeah. Like, that was, I think, how a lot of people at least viewed them. Like, you know, it's not an actual judgment, but it's a perception, I think.
You know, Ben, you've been to last year's media day, and I don't know if you got this perception, but now that I've been to two, you know, the players and coaches are there, and they're not all available for the same amount of time. They usually have windows of 30 minutes or so.
Sometimes less.
Sometimes less, as we found out. Yeah, because they rotate them in and out. But it's about an hour and a half, 2 hour, you know, event, I guess you could call it. You find yourself, at least I did, as trying to get the best nuggets from the players that you see the coaches sitting around there at their tables. You see Roberto Kelly and you see, you know, Flan and all these guys. And there's very few reporters that go over and talk to these guys. They're usually just talking amongst themselves. And
they absolutely get overlooked.
I know they absolutely get overlooked. And I always even I mean, I definitely didn't overlook them in the sense of I didn't realize it. I felt bad during the event. I'm like, oh, I really don't want to miss these guys, but Buster Posey's over here, you know?
Some of the younger guys too, but definitely the coaches.
Yeah, and you know, it's one of those guys that I regret not ever talking to. I never got a chance to talk to Flan, and he just seems like, man, he would have been an amazing interview.
You know what's funny, though? I would venture, and I guess it's tough because, you know, I've only really had one fandom. It's hard for me to look at other like clubs and say, well, about this. But I feel like there's a limited number of clubs where you feel like the fan base would pretty much ride or die for the third base coach.
Yeah.
And that's really what Flan accomplished with the Giants is he didn't make himself the center of the story very often, but he was always a player in it. And I think that it was, it's interesting to say that people look at this team and partly because he was animated and had character and was outspoken and had things to say and did work for Brian Stowe and really just didn't overly attempt to make himself visible, but kind of couldn't help it because he's Tim Flannery.
Yeah.
He had an impact on a lot of people because he was noticeable as a third base coach, and they aren't always. A lot of times you forget that they're there until either the announcer mentions them, you happen to catch them in a shot with the runner on third, or they screw up sending somebody home or not sending somebody home in time. And otherwise, they're almost a non-factor, and Flan was really never that. That was one of, I think, the most interesting things about him is just he developed a personality at third that you don't get from every third base coach, I think.
He's a good guy.
Kirk and Kipe helped that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that helps a lot. They always do.
Yeah, we're going to miss him here.
Yeah, although rumor is that we have some interesting internal personnel moves coming, some that are well due. The rumor that Amy G posted was said that we were hearing, you know, through CSN Authentic, Roberto Kelly apparently is going to be moving to third base. Billy Hayes is actually going to be coming out of the bullpen where he was a bullpen catcher and actually becoming the first base coach, which I actually think, from what I've heard about Billy Hayes, is great. I think that could be really awesome. I'm curious to see what tips he has when it comes to base running. But, I mean, from what I've heard, you know, just lifelong student of the game and, you know, decent guy. I mean, I'm curious to see how he does. And Roberto Kelly, like, it makes sense. You usually see guys go first base, third base, bench coach, manager. It just seems like the logical progression. But Roberto just has such an eye on the game. Like, when you watch them, it doesn't matter who he's talking to at first base. If he's not reaching for your gear, he's not looking at you. Because you're not important. Everything else on the field is important, and it's how you react to it, and that's your job. Right. You listen to him. He's paying attention. He'll give you an idea of what you need to do here, but he's never looking at the player at first. He never looks at them to talk. He's constantly watching the rest of the field. And at third base, it's going to be the same thing. That actually is the thing that makes you go, yep, Roberto's going to be fine. You know?
I think he's going to be fine. You know, it's third base coaching. Not rocket science, but man, it could make an impact on any given game. Mm-hmm. That's the
first. It's not easy either.
I don't even remember the Royals' third base coach's name anymore. I couldn't tell you who the third base coach was before Tim Flannery. You know what I mean? We barely know who these guys are.
I only remember a couple.
Flannery was one in a million.
And I think that Waller's moved on, or was it Van Berkelio? And like Glenn Hoffman for the Padres. Mm-hmm. I have a really limited number of third base coaches in my head.
Yeah, Wendell Kim was there for years.
Yeah, Waven Wendell's all I really remember.
Yeah. Man.
Well, all right, so we're going to wrap this up here real quick. But Ben, I saw that you added to the notes here a little extra segment, a little fun here. So why don't you go ahead and talk about that?
So I'm going to throw one out here. So let's say dream free agent. If you could have one free agent added to the Giants this offseason, and we're going to pretend it's not at the cost of anyone else the Giants are pursuing. Literally, they're just there so that you can go, I have always wanted to root for this player in a Giants uniform, and now here they are. Who's your dream free agent for the offseason?
I'll go first.
Okay.
I'll go with Pat Neshek.
All right.
Pat I'm with Neshek. That.
I really like Pat Neshek.
Only because I looked through this list of people that are free agents this year, and I would have preferred to have done this little thing this next year or the year before that, because there's not a really good list of free agents this year, period. It's,
yeah.
You know, so out of all those guys, I mean, I've always liked Pat Neshek. We all know it was a few years ago now.
Yeah.
Where his infant son passed away right after. And I always got a kick out of him, even back in his days in Minnesota with his funky delivery. You know, he was so hard to hit in the NLCS. He's a guy I'd love to see if they lose Sergio, which I assume will happen. Yeah. Pat Neshek, he would be my dream guy.
And Neshek really blossomed this year. And he's just like from everything that I've heard from Cardinals fans, they really love Pat Neshek. And, you know, as we know, that doesn't happen with every reliever. It can. We certainly love a lot of ours here. But I mean, it's, the, you know, Neshek just seems like a really just down to earth, honest, great guy, and it's really nice to see he had some success this year. I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
Chad, you got one?
Yeah, you know, so we are talking about current free agents, right? Not like
current free agents.
Babe
Ruth.
No.
It's I'd really like to pick up. No.
I was gonna say Uribe, but I had to look up, and he's signed for another year.
Just bring back Barry.
Yeah, just bring back Barry.
Well, because he's a free agent. He never technically retired. Bring back Barry.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, he's apparently planning a comeback this year. So we'll see about that. It's going to be a little weird.
So is Zito. Never know.
Yeah, definitely. To be honest, when the offseason started, my eyes were on Max Scherzer.
Mm-hmm.
That's who I wanted real bad. I think he's...
I mean, that guy is a... Scherzer's a hell of a guy too, to be honest.
Yeah, he's a real nice guy, and he's
been through a lot, and really has come out. You know, just seems like a decent human being,
right? I like his stuff. It's you know, pinpoint control, hard throwing. I mean, to be honest, when you look at his stats, they're very comparable to John Lester. They got pretty much the same career ERA. His WHIP's a little lower. Strikeout is definitely higher than Lester, so because he is a power pitcher. So I would say Scherzer just a hair above Lester, but if the Giants land Lester, going to be perfectly happy with that because he's coming from the other side, and I think there's a big bonus to that.
Well, here's my question for you. So out of the, I don't know if you've had a chance to glance at the free agent list lately, and I'm sure we've looked at it a ton this offseason. If you had to pick, not just for utility, because I do think I would enjoy rooting for Scherzer, not just because he's damn good at pitching, but I feel like I would enjoy rooting for Scherzer. Like, I just think I'd like the guy. Mm-hmm. But if you had to pick one guy who's a free agent right now that you could bring onto the team, pretty much not just, like, remotely, but not really because of his baseball prowess, but because it's somebody that you've always been like, yeah, you know, I've always wanted to root for that guy. You want me to? I can.
Yeah,
I have two, to be honest, but I have one more than the other. So I'll go with my less so, and then I'll let you think about one, and then I'll drop the other. So my less so is actually Brandon McCarthy. I really like McCarthy. He's fun on Twitter, and you know, he works hard. I won't say that he's the most successful starting pitcher out of those on the free agents, but he's also not terrible. But not terrible and really likable is enough to go a long way with Giants fans. And I think that if McCarthy was on this team, if nothing else, Giants Twitter would have a field day with having McCarthy on the team. And it'd be awesome. I just feel like the dialogue that would create would be so much fun. Just having Amanda McCarthy and Brandon McCarthy
going on
about insane, ridiculous stuff with Giants fans.
Yeah.
It just seems like it'd be so crazy because there's so many ridiculous Giants Twitterers I've met out there that are even more ridiculous than Twitterers on other teams.
Yeah.
And I feel like just seeing that interplay would be insane.
Now, he's by far my favorite Major League Baseball player to follow on Twitter. Like,
yeah,
by far.
And I mean, you know, I think it'd be awesome to have somebody that at Media Day I could ask soccer questions and be out-soccered. You know, I just, like, McCarthy just seems so incredibly likable to me that McCarthy would be easily second on my list of irrationally desired free agents that I want to root for in a Giants uniform.
That's a good one.
So, what do you think? Any thoughts?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Going through the rosters here. I know there's some guys out there that I would love, just like you said.
Well,
I wavered on
Nate Sheerholtz for a minute.
Yeah,
I don't blame you.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I wavered on bringing him back because that'd be kind of cool, but I mean, kind of not, because do you feel like he'd be upset at his playing time again and want out.
Yeah. And I mean, it's tough when they've already been a Giant at one point and you're like, but things kind of soured and I'd feel bad, you know? Right. And then there's the guys that is.
Oh, I know who the other one is.
Can I say Will Clark? Oh, wait.
He did actually.
I know who the other one is because I have that guy's name written on my notepad thinking about bringing him up.
All right. I think we got to hear it, Eric.
Well, I mean, this is your other one that you were talking about.
Yeah. Oh, it came up at one point. If you stopped here and you rewind all the way through the podcast, you might figure out who I'm going to bring up.
Oh, there's no way in hell. Is it Ichiro?
It's Ichiro. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've always really liked Ichiro just because it's, you know, when he started getting bigger was a bit after my brother had lived in Japan for a little while. And so it was this interesting kind of intertwining of two things that I was sort of interested in. At the time, more so Japan than baseball. But just hearing about Ichiro, like it hadn't really occurred to me when I was younger that like, oh, there is also baseball in Japan to an extent where players who are good there will come over here, but not necessarily be that good. And then suddenly Ichiro is making news by being outstanding, you know? And like, I remembered vaguely Hideo Nomo and vaguely, you know, like just like Shinjo and stuff. But just like Ichiro was always the one name that stood out to me as like, as a very distinct, very unique in his personality, but really a product of two different, very different baseball cultures. Mm-hmm. That it's sort of moving from one to the other. And just, you know, like even when he became a Yankee, it's just impossible for me not to like Ichiro. And if I could just randomly say there is a reason for Ichiro to sign a 1-year contract and play as a Giant, I would just fall over myself. Like, well, I don't care whether I thought he was going to start in left over somebody I thought would be better, I would just flip out.
I have a strong reason to be against that signing.
Mm-hmm.
We never get a seat in the press box.
Yeah.
Ever.
Oh man, it was, yeah, it was,
it was bad enough.
Bad enough when
it's
we
be
had,
hard enough on
when
that
we had
Saturday
Kensuke
ring
Tanaka.
Day.
Yeah,
bad
Tanaka
enough,
was
right?
Bad enough. That's Tanaka. I mean, come
right.
on.
Wow. And I liked Tanaka okay, but he was not Ichiro by any means.
Not even close.
No.
Oh my god. Yeah. I mean, Ichiro's a god. Tanaka's like a semi sort of god.
A lesser deity, if you will.
Yeah, lesser deity, exactly.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. That's
that's selfish reasons.
Yeah, but you know, like if that wasn't a factor, if somebody told me like, hey, for 1 year you're not gonna be able to get into the box, but Ichiro's gonna be a Giant, I'd be like, done. That's fine. Can I come to Media Day? Like, just don't care. Yeah. That's awesome.
You know, one of the guys that, it's funny now that it hit me, because I was trying to think of, you know, guys I've admired recently and even in the mm-hmm. recent past.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not kidding you, what a name that just flashed in front of my mind, because I've always liked his demeanor and how he is off the field and his everything about, is Tim Hudson. I went, oh, right, but the Giants already have him. I'm dead serious. It was like, patching back to like 2009 or something. It was like, I really like Tim Hudson. He seems like a really quality guy. Oh, we have him, right?
Right.
Oh, yeah. So we're not thinking about AJ Pierzynski then, okay.
Bizarro world.
You don't want to bring him back? Isn't that the guy that we all want to see back?
Let's do it.
I'm going to go throw up real quick and I'll be right back.
Yeah.
I think Ichiro would be cool in San Francisco. I think he'd be fine as the fifth outfielder here too. He would teach guys things.
Yeah, I mean, Ichiro is still good enough to start in left like half the time, especially after the inevitable Angel Pagan injury.
Yeah,
would you start Ichiro Suzuki over Juan Perez? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, probably.
But I mean, just there's a couple of other names on here of guys that just like I've generally heard of like decent character, which, you know, I could be wrong, but guys like, you know, like Kadir, who ended up getting signed by the Mets, or like Mark Ellis. I would actually really enjoy seeing Mark Ellis in a Giants uniform, even though we have no need for him at second base. You know, like, I almost want to say Grady Sizemore, but I think I'll change my mind on that.
Yeah, no.
Maybe not that.
I'll just break something random.
Yeah.
Does Derek Jeter count?
Yeah. Coming out of retirement. Sure.
I mean, apparently Ryan Dempster counts according to the list we're looking at. So.
The one I'm looking at has Jeter on it, so.
Does it really?
Yeah.
Maybe it's official until the season starts.
Mine actually doesn't. That's funny.
I'm on ESPN.
I see.
I typed and clicked.
Click, click, ding.
I did the Google. That's all.
I did the Google.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm looking through and I'm like, is there anybody else that I can think of that's just like everybody like really just seems to enjoy being around his presence? And I'm like, yeah, we've some of the ones that are on there that it's like, oh yeah, people really like these guys. Oh yeah, we've signed them before.
I know, isn't that funny?
Well, we've done that.
Good character. I think they go for a lot of players that do have that good character because you know Brian Saban has always purported that. You
know, I don't know, LaTroy Hawkins. That'd be fun, I think.
He's always said that, and we know this, the clubhouse chemistry that the Giants have had over the last 5 years has been incredible, and all the players and coaches and Sabian and even the reporters just talk about it all the time. And this is why the Giants, in my honest opinion, and probably their opinion, on paper, the national writers always pick the Giants as the underdog in all 9 series they've been in. Through the postseason in those 3 years, they've been the underdog in every single one. Why have they won most of those? I shouldn't say all of them. Most of those, clubhouse chemistry. I firmly believe that. Can never prove that, but that's just my opinion. And the Giants
just—it's an intangible because you can't measure it. But
yeah, you can believe in it.
Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said. You know, obviously, it's easier when you're winning. But these are guys that even before the season has started, even after like coming off of terrible years, they just. Like this year, you know, we got in there and Mike Morse was already like, man, I already feel at home here.
Yeah.
Like, I love this. And I'm like, man, you've been here a couple minutes and we're coming off a terrible year and you're coming off an okay year. And
well, you know, and Boch was behind that signing.
Yeah.
Because he managed the Japan team and Morse was on that one. And,
oh, that's right.
And he just was like, this guy, perfect fit. So he was,
absolutely was
kind
too.
Of the scout, if you will. For Sabian on that one.
Everybody really nailed that one as far as does he fit the team?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Morse, Peavy, Pence, nailed it.
Yeah.
Really, just like we have not all the same personalities, but certainly like just that sort of that enthusiasm that started with Pablo and Romo and carries into sort of that level-headedness that hits Bumgarner and Posey and then moves into that goofiness that hits like Pence and Morse. And you just sort of see this sort of like 3-point – like everybody kind of fits within this general range for the most part.
It's definitely a melting pot of fun personalities.
And it works.
Doesn't seem to care.
Absolutely works.
With all the free agents, you know, because we're getting towards the end here, I'm sure, and wrapping it up. Mm. Rapid fire, quick question. All right, John Lester, just yes or no, is he going to sign with the Giants?
Yes.
No.
I'm with Chad. I say yes. Okay.
I would be happy to be wrong.
Chase Headley, is he going to sign with the Giants?
No.
No.
I'm with you guys on that one. I think no. I have no idea what they're going to do with the third base position. I think we're just totally
Base, we're going to start by making it up. It's going to be almost a Jose Castillo thing, and then we're going to figure something out.
I think it's going to be grasping at straws to begin the season.
Yep, or it's going to be Joaquin Arias.
Yeah, that's grasping at
and
straws.
And that scares me even more. Okay, so if they miss out on Lester, do they get Scherzer?
God,
given that there's been no connection yet, it's really hard for me to say.
Exactly, I have no basis of information to put that on. So I don't know.
Like Scherzer and Lester.
I know, but for the Giants
doctors.
Podcast, throw something against the wall. What do you think is going to happen?
Yes, I think they will make a strong push for him. So
I think
Scherzer. I think they push for Scherzer, but I don't think they get him because I think the Yankees are going to get him.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what scares me about that. I say yes on Lester. I say no. I don't think they'll get Headley. But honestly, I'd like, Melky Cabrera. Do you think that's a real possibility? Or they're talking he's leaning towards Seattle now.
Yeah, he's leaning towards Seattle. But
I mean, Cabrera and Cano and Cruz. And I could see that happening.
Yeah, but, exactly. So I say, you know, no Melky. In
so this time next week, we could have a completely different team, though, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really weird.
We could be talking about failing that, we could have a completely different outlook on the rest of the league.
Absolutely. I mean, these meetings go through, the 11th, and we saw there was a ton of signings today. Smarge is apparently on the move from the A's to the White Sox.
The A's are basically having a literal fire sale. They are just, wow. They are amazing.
Yeah, there's all this going on. We might be talking about a totally different team, and that's what makes this time of year hot stove kind of, you know, this is what made this little...
Specifically GM meetings when everything is just happening at full speed for about a week. Mm-hmm. Like, just good luck keeping up.
Yep.
Kidding.
Yeah, I've been busy all day, but my Twitter's been staying open just trying to see if any news comes in. And tomorrow, actually, I have a very busy day, yet all I'm going to be doing is looking down to see,
day tomorrow. Yep. I got to put on some, like, text me for important words, you know, keywords or something. All right, well, that will wrap up episode 78. I didn't mention that at the beginning, so this is our 78th podcast, not including all the bonusodes, so we're probably, you know, close to 100, actually, when you include all those post-game drunken episodes, which are goddamn so much fun, by the way. Glad you're actually able to join us on one of those, Eric, so hopefully one of these days you'll be able to come back out. Yeah. That'll be good.
More. I don't doubt it.
All right, so you can follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. That's the collective account that we all follow or manage. And like us on Facebook. You can find our show notes and podcasts with all associated links on TortureCast.com. We even have a YouTube channel where we have all of our player interviews from the last couple of years. We do have a lot of audio interviews as well from the Clubhouse back in September, so be sure to check those out. You can follow us individually. I'm at ChadK21. Ben is at Fried Duck. And Eric is at Two Out Hits. So I don't know if you guys have anything to pimp, any you know, podcasts or websites or anything you've been involved in recently you want to throw out there?
No, I got nothing. I'm waiting until stuff happens.
You got a lot going on. I did get to do an episode of the Ace of Geeks, which isn't really our, you know, it's not our usual fare. If you have an interest in geeky subjects, though, the Ace of Geeks is a really great take on it with a lot of awesome different contributors that roll in and pretty much just chat about whatever's most recent. You know, they'll chat about like Dragon Age Inquisition, and they'll turn around and chat about like the upcoming, you know, talks about Ready Player One, the movie. And it's just it's a different side of my interests. But these are guys and girls that I've known for a long time, and they're awesome. So yeah, Ace of Geeks podcast.com, I believe, is their current site. So check that out. I got to do the most recent episode, and hopefully it won't be the last one. They're a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I know we do have some cross, you know, kind of fan interest here with the Torture mm-hmm. Cast and a lot of, you know, geek related products.
We freely admit that we are one of the geekiest Giants podcasts.
Oh, absolutely.
Out there.
I mean, I'm obviously, you know, big
real
into
small
gaming.
Field to choose from.
And oh yeah, and I should have said, not that he needs any more followers, but Willie wasn't here tonight. You can follow him at Willie Dills. Of course, he has like freaking 9,000 followers because of his internet gaming stuff, World of Warcraft and Hearthstone and others.
Our local celebrity.
Our local, you
guys,
yeah.
You guys, I finally finished the first Final Fantasy game. I've been trying to do it for like 11 years.
He's too big to record with us tonight. Wow. So
I really have. I'm not even kidding. It's terrible.
Oh,
and I've been
goodness.
Great.
That's
so
insane.
Excited. I turned into like Captain Ahab. I was just like, I can see the ending, but it's, you know, it just always eludes me. And I would switch to a different system and start over. It was a very interesting case of persistence finally paying off.
I can't stop talking
about it because I'm just really, I don't like know what to do with the rest of my life now. Baseball is done and I beat Final Fantasy the first game.
You're done.
That's it.
Well, I'm like, worrying my wife right now because I already, you know, we moved back in May and I have my little fan cave here, which I, you know, put that little tour up on,
right.
on YouTube, but that was before, laptop. Failure there. That was before they won the World Series. So now I am constantly on Amazon.com and other sites just ordering all the extra World Series paraphernalia. And so she's a little scared about our credit card debt at this point. But
if we don't see,
you know what?
If we don't
it's a good problem
like
to have.
Month, we're going to be right. asking Trish if you're okay.
Said, hey, I didn't spend $500 on a World Series ticket this year. So I got that money to spend on stuff.
She suffocated him under all of that Giants gear.
Really, though, we just find him. He's just got a flag tied around his neck.
That's awesome. All right,
yeah,
so
he's under all that stuff somewhere.
Somewhere buried. Yeah, you should see my office now. It's a mess. But
oh man.
All right. Well, that will do it for episode 78. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'm sure we'll be back with another episode in a couple of weeks or so. Certainly. We will, if major things have happened. We won't be recording tomorrow night if Lester signs, but if things, the dominoes fall as we want them to, we're definitely going to be recording here pretty frequently. So anyway, for Ben and for Eric, I'm Chad, and we'll see you next time. Boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at TortureCast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.